And what I would like to see come out of this is an idea towards some working items and some more work for the DNS working group to undertake. Over to Fernando.
Hello. First of all, I would like to know, I have posted two versions of the document, one last week and other one yesterday. Who has read both of them? Okay. And who has read the first one, the one I posted last week? Okay. Thanks for read that, but I think the first document is, for those who have read it, it was very ambitious, and I spoke with Jean and with Peter Cox, and we agree on the idea of split it in two documents. So I will explain. The first document that is the one I posted yesterday is a smart one that is mainly a practical document, a guide for network administrators with a low-level expertise in DNS, with to help them in the migration from a DNS and DNS, a server farm with DNS, a domain with from one IP range to other. The idea is to create a best practice document, a right best practice document, and a second idea is not included here, but a second idea is to have another document as a policy document with a recommendation for ISPs, for registers, blah, blah, blah. This is one of the things that I want to discuss, if this second document is a good idea. I hope the first one is a good idea. And speaking about this document, that is the one that is written now, is the practical thing. Is the goal is to define a method to migrate from IP address to other, avoiding the shutdown of the domain, the shutdown or the blackout, as you prefer to call it, avoiding to lose connectivity from internet and from the service. For those who hasn't read it, that's most of you, I will briefly describe in 5 slides the document. The document is about 6 or 7 pages, I think. First, the pre-requirements we need is control over the DNS server, the new DNS server, to have 1T authority on the NIC. That is obvious, but sometimes it's not so obvious because the contact person in the NIC is not in the company anymore, is the address, the mail address is lost, a lot of things can happen. To plan in advance, I recommend 2 weeks at least. And duplicate DNS server. This is one of the things we must discuss. I prefer to duplicate the DNS server, so have one different machine for the old DNS server and one machine for the new DNS server. But some people has proposed to have the same machine with dual IP address. I don't like that, and of course it's not always possible. If you are making a physical migration from one location to other, this is not possible. If you are migrating only IP addressing in the same location, it's possible to do that, but have some interesting problems. And also it's not necessary, but it's very recommended to duplicate the other service to avoid blackout of the web server, the mail server, and coordination with the ESPs or the carriers you are using, the old one and the new one. The new one is no problem usually. The old one is usually a problem because it's someone that is losing a customer and normally don't want to cooperate. But it's a good thing if he do it. So the proposal, the procedures I propose is, this is the original situation. We have the server and the DNS in the old address range and the NIC group records as pointing to our old DNS server. Then we install a new DNS server in the new address space. Of course, we need overlapping IP address. This is one of the prerequisites, overlapping IP address. Contact with both IP address during some time. Install a DNS server in the new address range and copy all the data pointing to the old servers. And then modify swap values to lower the timing values. The retry, TTL, all this kind of stuff. Is all described in the document. And then, also, you, if you have delegate, I hope, the reverse resolution, the reverse of the new IP address, this is not time critical. Do the configure the reverse solution and delegate it from right in this case. This is one thing that I think we should agree. This is the all values as recommended by right, or the standard values, and this is the values I recommend if we duplicate the other servers, like the web server, the mail server, and if we don't duplicate. If we don't duplicate, we need to have a very small TTL, so all the other machines retry very frequently, all their clients, all the clients on the internet, we retry very frequently, and when we turn on the machines again, the shutdown is reduces at a minimum. If we duplicate those service, there is no problem, so we can use a bigger bandwidth. We can come back to this later if you want to discuss it. And after setting up the new server, okay, we send the form to the NIC to tell, okay, change your glue record. And he updated it. Of course, each NIC has a delay, a time to live for their values. In the case of the ES NIC, So, in the case of the NIC, the Spanish NIC, this is 172,800 seconds, and from the COM net, 86,400 seconds. Okay, we wait for the propagation, and when we check the propagation is made, we migrate the server, change the DNS server to the new, and because we have lowered the TTL previously, the change is very fast distributed across internet, I hope. Finally, some cleanup. We return the SOAR record, our SOAR record to its standard values to avoid overloading the DNS server and traffic. Verify that the chains are propagate, and we can shut down all the old servers. This is the procedure with, okay, in the document is described more thoroughly with examples using binds. And I have one appendix that I don't know if it's necessary, that this, when I started this was a good idea, I don't know now. It's what I call traumatic chains. That is when we can't keep both address range active at the same times. Sometimes it's not possible, in a very few cases, but the goal in this case is only to maintain the DNS server. And the idea is to install a DNS server in a third party, dismount the original equipment, install it in the new address range, and migrate the DNS server to this new address range. Well, okay, so a little more described in the document, but I don't know at all if it's necessary. So this document has now two problems. The first is the writing. I agree with Jim that my English is not very good, so we need a lot of rewriting, and I think...
Fernando, neither is my English. It's not very good either.
Mine is worse. Okay, I have some... Well, in Spanish we are used to writing passive voice. I have written the document in the passive voice, and I understand that it's more difficult in English to read, so I have some feedback on this. I would like the document to expand it using example with other DNS server, perhaps. Include some information with other local regional NICs, like timings, all this kind of stuff. And include information about IPv6 migration also. This is our proposed upgrade. Of course, we can do more things. Things that I want to discuss is first the thing about duplicate the DNS server or keep one single DNS server with duplicate IP address, because this is something that has sparked some discussion of the meeting. If we need the appendix with a traumatic procedure, and if we need beside this document, we need a policy document with a recommendation, with a description of the process, recommendation of timings, all this kind of stuff. And Fourth, I would like to discuss also, we have another appendix with an example of the form used by the Spanish NIC filled with the information, with the sample information. This also was a good idea in his moment, but I think that any DNS administrator already knows how to fill this, so I think isn't this example form is not necessarily. If it's necessarily, we will need to include one for each local NIC, and that's not a good idea, I think. From now on, well, today I would like to agree in the technical content of the document, if possible, with some minor changes in the future. And Jim has proposed to create a group of four people to a design team. I hope there is not too much design. I hope the design is almost finished. To teach me, not teach me English, but to work on the document and help me rewrite it to meet the standards of right, the very high standard of right. Already I have one volunteer, is Daniel Diaz. He's not here now. He sent me a mail, I think he sent to you. And of course I and Jim are looking for more volunteers. Okay, questions, comments?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Fernando. Do we have any comments about this document for those who have actually read it or have browsed it in terms of, do we think this is something that the working group could pick up and do something with? Is there a sort of consensus that this is a valuable document and it would serve a useful thing not just for the right community but for the internet as a whole? I see a few heads nodding. Okay. I think it would be a good idea we can do this. I personally think this is something that's badly needed, and that I welcome the fact that Fernando has been given a first draft of something to actually get this process underway. I think that's been very, very helpful. One thing I do have concern about is that the length of the document just now is 30 pages or thereabouts, and I think for a lot of people, when you see a document of 30 pages in front of you, the initial reaction is, I don't have the time to look at it. So, Peter, do you have something to say? Yeah.
You took the words right out of my mouth, but then there's one other issue raised in that document, more or less as a side note. That is the TTL of the say NS records in the TLDs or registries zones.
Yes.
And the final effect those TTLs have, and there's a feature called instant registration or something like that, proposed by a registry at least. And I'd really like to have your okay. I'd suggest that we have a closer look on this. What is the real effect of those TTLs, and how far can they be lowered? And is there a lower line that should not be crossed?
Yeah. Well, I don't want to sort of try and sort of jump in here, but I think there's a couple of things here that fall off. I have had some discussions on the mailing list and with Peter and Yap about this. I think what might be the best way forward is for Fernando's document to try and split it into two separate things. I think there's two separate audiences we need to address, in my opinion. One is for naive administrators that need almost a simple cookbook recipe. This is what you do. These are the steps. This is what you enter into your zone files. This is when you reload the zones. Push this button and then something will happen. So I think we could maybe condense something down to maybe say a short 8-page document or so that just goes through those steps without really explaining what this is all about. I think the next thing to do is to have something which focuses more on the policy issues that places. This is why you have to start thinking about this and do this one TTL interval before or one zone expire interval before, how to coordinate this and plan this and why you have to carry these things out in a specific step. So if somebody wanted more information, they could get that information. What might follow on from that, to hint from what Peter was saying, is we might want to come back and then look at things in terms of what the TLD registries are doing and putting into the zone files in terms of TTLs for delegations and for glue. I think that may be a sensible work item or sets of work items for us. Patrick?
Yeah, and I agree with what you said, but I also think that even the 8-page document should start with a section with just, like, these are the various steps you have to go through, and then the rest of the document can be explanations why, because even people that do know, for example, how to update a TCP key between the primary and secondary server, it's good to have the check mark there. But if you don't know what it is, then you can look later in the document to get more instructions of what actually is. And this brings me to something that I think this document really is really talking about, and that is to move a primary server from one IP address to another one, or move a slave server from one place to another one. So one thing that I think this document has to talk about as well that is not really there, I think, clear enough, is how to change zone transfers, how to change masters into slaves, vice versa, how to handle TC keys handshakes, because TC keys are actually used today in zone transfers, because that is the way I recommend people to change the IP address of a host, which is more or less the same thing as moving a service from one host to another.
Okay. Do we have general consensus that this is a good thing to work on? Yes. Okay. I think what I would like to suggest at this point is that we have raised an action item for the working group chair, and that I should hold this token. So we should read this a working an action item for the working group, and I should hold the token to turn Fernando's document into a ripe document, so that by the time we can maybe come round to the next ripe meeting, we can actually have the working group endorse this, and we can actually have it published as a ripe document, or perhaps a series of ripe documents, depending how we define to structure it. So that's the action item. However, we need some people to do the action. Fernando's volunteering. Thank you very much. I'm volunteering. And we've also had some assistance offered from the Daniel Diaz, as Fernando already said. Now, I'd like some other volunteers to come forward for this design team and maybe work on this. I don't want a real large group, because we tried to do this before with stuff. Patrick, Jeff, Bruce, and Yala. I think that's a good enough mix. I don't think it'd be good to try and do this document editing job on the right DNS working group mailing list. Brad knows, as you probably saw, put a whole bunch of comments in there and said, you've got a comma in the wrong place here in this line. That's not the way we're going to get these documents done. So I think if we get this small design team together, so just for the benefit of the scribe, that was Jeff Sisson, Yala Greepsland, Patrick Falstrom, Bruce Campbell, and myself, Fernando, Daniel Diaz, and we'll get this thing done. Okay. Thank you very much, Fernando.
I have to get stuff from the podcast stream.
Sorry about that. Okay. Next up, we have Yap, who's going to tell us about the consequences that SECSAC have been thinking about with the whole Site Finder debacle and other things that fell off the back of that.
These things were my notes.
Okay.
I can see my old slides. Yes, I'm talking here with the head SEC firmly in place, and this is actually based on the report Steve Koch gave on the ICANN meeting in Kuala Lumpur, and I have some additional comments, so I ripped out. So I kind of changed. Another thing happened is that my Macintosh died on the way to here, so it's just pulled together, and on my I finished it on my Star Office implementation of an old Sony, so some of the bullets apparently are kind of stained, and this is by accident.
Now we believe you.
And the whole report, 85 pages, is on the ICANN website. I just checked, and I noticed that on the page itself is not a link, but the whole report is there, and I ask ICANN to fix this part. And let's move on with the report. Just a quick word about what the SEC actually is. And it's an advisory committee to ICANN and to the ICANN board. And it's all we're all volunteers and we are unpaid and it's all done on individual base and we assume that we are technically competent in doing this. And the committee itself operates kind of independently. And it doesn't speak for ICANN, it doesn't represent ICANN, and it focuses on security and stability and not on politics of context, although sometimes these things slip into the discussion because the real world is made of politics and context. That's so, what actually happened? Well, 5th September 2003, first signed change.com and net domain registries. And now I'm going really on what that means. Is basically, as a consequence, I mean, there were a lot of things that happened. Email systems, spam filters, and other servers failed. And on that, people had to incur direct and indirect costs to make these services work again. And some other people observed reduction in performance, creation of work, and a lot of work required to compensate the problems caused by the wildcard. And one of the other... That's it. And the other finding of the report is that the actor violated some engineering principles and it kind of blurred the architectural layers. And basically, the whole wildcard was tied to the HTTP protocol, but the wildcard in DNS doesn't really make any assumption regarding protocols. And so a lot of traffic on under other operating protocols and I have to skip here. And causing a lot of actions and more control of the network was actually moved to the center of the network and away from the periphery, violating the end-to-end principle. Another consequence of that is the third finding. Actually, it follows out of the second one. If you want to add new protocols to the net, as consequences that you have to all the time first check how Verizon would react on the protocols in case of error conditioning, and by that give some more control about protocol development. And that's the official protocols. There are a lot of other protocols around there on the net are not officially described and will have the same problems. We don't know how many that are. The change was actually for all the people confronted abrupt, and Verizon claims to have done a lot of research, in-house research, and to see what the problems were with the wildcard. But still, it was apparently not enough because all the people complaining about the fact. And that was really abrupt. And it took people by surprise. And then another, and I will expand on that a bit later on, is that there were a lot of reactions out in the field, and people put random hacks into name servers, field configuration, stuff like that, and which was basically caused ISC to bring out yet another option to bind, trying to get the hack centralized. Whether that was good or I personally don't know, but that's become known as the delegation only hack. And another concern from a lot of people were that since email ended up in the wildcard, people were concerned about the fact that by that way information would go to FairAssign, which was not meant to that. FairAssign of course denies that they ever looked at the contents of the addresses, the mail, and whatever came to that, but the concerns were there anyway. And what other people didn't like was that the site finding program itself, the one doing the lookup, was able to collect a lot of information associated with users, and so that would give that more or less problems for privacy things. And so really the last thing that all these events basically reduce the trust in the network on a large scale. That's these are the main findings of the committee. This is from the executive summary, I mean, which is only 10 pages, and the rest of 75 pages goes into details about what about these various things, a lot of examples given. And well, the ESSEC committee made some recommendations, and the recommendations are basically no new wildcards in the TLDs. And the second recommendation is roll back all the wildcards in existing TLDs. I mean, what you saw happen as well is that not only the FairAssign wildcard came to existence, that you saw for a little time on various TLDs people just adding wildcards, and after the uproar on net they were quickly removed again, but not a lot, but these were the smaller TLDs. Another recommendation, which was actually already in progress, but is to clean up the specification of the wildcards. I mean, the wildcards are very badly understood in general, and there are a lot of name servers doing plainly wrong or versions of it. And and so the clarification on the use of a wildcard should be done, some provision of additional guidance on the use of synthesized responses in the DNS hierarchy is wanted. And one of the things is wildcards were kind of sneaked into the specs and only used for end zones most of the time, and specifically for mail things. And now, if you really want to do something wildcard for a certain protocol, you probably should define a new one. And this is more a political recommendation. Is if you are doing this type of things, I mean, it should be a process involving both the technical and the larger user community. And to consider security stability, a lot of testing and refinement, and adequate notice and coordinations with affected potential, affected system managers and end users. Now, this is actually the summary of the summary of the report. And when we move on, is not to stand with countermeasures. One of the one IEC brought out is delegation only. We flag, we assume that all TLDs only delegate SONs. So you can figure out whether people are doing things in SONA and just block the in SONA authoritative answers. A few of the exceptions were documented. .ie, Elfie, Lithuania, and Germany, and Museum. Museum had already part of the business model of the Museum registry is to use wildcards. But the delegation only worked, it was effective, but it also had a lot of problems. And just for the benefit of my own curiosity, and we're still running delegation-only option switched on in the bind service. Amazingly little.
Maybe you can ask how many people had it turned on.
And how...
Can you repeat my question?
Yeah. How many people had actually turned it on when the option came on? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Around 7. And so you've all switched it off?
I don't remember.
You switched it off. Don't remember. So I guess there are a lot of people who don't remember it. And that's the why. And but it creates a lot of problems. What you'll notice now is that due to the start of IPv7, a lot of CODs are changing the name schemes of the name servers. I mean, instead of the long ones, they try to compress it as small as possible to have more room for doing Quad A support in name servers. As an example, Sweden now is a.ns.se, b.ns.se. Now more people following this stuff. And this is often done in the zone of the TOD itself, which suddenly makes this TOD not a delegation only anymore. And I didn't have time to do walk around, but of the things I've seen where people have done this name compression, you actually see a lot of zones which are not mentioned, which are now doing this and become not delegation only anymore. So when I was testing this two name server which had it switched on and was forgotten to switch it off, I mean, I couldn't find the name servers of Sweden anymore. And same with Belgium, I tried. And people who have still switched it on or had it switched on, I really would recommend to have a good look at your name server again as soon as possible. Because it might break more delegations than you think it is. And as said in the defines, this intelligence in the middle breaks end-to-end philosophy of net. And another thing that happened is that now there are a lot of people around playing various other tricks with name servers by doing things in the middle which they are not supposed to do. Are there questions?
Are there any questions for Yelp? None? Well, I have a question, Yelp.
You have some water?
You just have to drink from the bottle.
Yeah, okay. I'm used to that.
It's interesting to notice we've got this potential problem of the combination of two fairly sort of innocuous changes, maybe having a rather unpleasant result. We've got the delegation only hacks and bind, plus the fact we've now got TLDs and other people start to think about label compression and efficient label compression and all the rest of it. Do you think there would be any value in trying to write this up in some way, or is this already covered in the Sex Act document? Could we perhaps write this up and have it produced, say, as a report or a warning, or maybe even a right document?
I haven't thought about that yet, but it can always be written up somewhere. I actually came aware of this just shortly, so I don't know how bad the problem is. And maybe it's not as bad as I... But given the fact that people don't remember whether they have switched it off, I'm afraid that it's...
Yeah, this is particularly the thing that I'm worried about, because, as we all know, people tend not to document their DNS configurations, and DNS host masters change fairly regularly. and quite often you inherit a mess that was the mess created by the guy that was in the job four iterations of the job ago. And so if these things are not properly documented and the consequences could be quite severe in the future, I think we should maybe start be looking to try to do something about it, if only to warn people what the potential problems might be. But as Yap says, we don't quite know what the extent of the problem is, and I think it might be useful to try and do some follow-up on this and try and get some other information, say, for the next RIGHT meeting. So if we could maybe agree that we have an action item that perhaps... I'll delegate this to Yap. I'm very good at volunteering people for things. So I think if I delegate Yap as to order this action item, is to do a little bit more research into this to see if the problem is as bad as it might well be, and if so, what the next steps for the working group could be. So could I have consensus that would be a good way forward? Someone please nod their head. Thank you. Okay, next up we have Bruce Samble. Bruce is going to give us a bunch of information about statistics, about what's been happening with the RIGHT NCC name servers, with traffic levels and queries and so on. And I must apologise because Bruce had volunteered to do this for the previous RIGHT meeting and it just dropped off the list. So that's why he's here doing it this time now.
Okay, most of you have seen me, I wear a blue badge and I'm normally running around like a headless chicken. But when I'm not doing the meeting, one of my jobs is looking after the name servers of the NCC.
And run around.
And run around like a headless chicken. So this is just simply a collection of statistics on what sort of queries we're seeing on ns.rife.net and a couple of other name servers that have ns-something-rather.rife.net. So the collection started out as purely verifying the traffic rates that we thought we had. Because before that we had no idea, well, we had a fairly good idea, but we didn't have a guaranteed idea of what was going on. We also wanted to split apart different zones onto different name servers in preparation for some of those zones going on to DNSSEC. Otherwise, the memory footprint on our name server is far too big. So, you know, it's an informal side project back in February. Got interrupted a couple of times since then. So, going straight into the graphs. After the graphs, I'll tell you what I've been doing to collect them. There were a few anomalies in the selection. This just simply shows the top 10 zones that are queried on our name server, ns.rife.net. The order that you see there on the graph is, you know, 10, 9, 8, so forth. Where it's saying ARPA, that's requests that we're receiving that don't actually fall into zones that we generate, or actually secondary for that matter. So you can see here that there's a huge spike up at the top where we're receiving queries for stuff that we don't know why we're receiving queries for. Then you go into 80.900.alpha, which is the latest V4 allocation, 217, blah, 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 blah. AU doesn't really show up there in the graph. It's like down there. But we secondary one zone, so from AU. So we've got a lot of reverse stuff that is high traffic, which we expected, but one TLD is coming up there as well. The bad, the reference to bad there is other queries apart from ARPA where we don't know where to categorise them. You know, things like give me the A record for joeblow@hotmail.com, which we actually get asked for. So... this one shows the CCTLDs that we secondary. We secondary approximately 90 CCTLDs on our name server. So this shows the spread of what country codes are being queried. Again, AU over the other side of the world is fairly high. CCTLDs that we don't actually formally secondary, but for some reason we have a reference to them, is also fairly high. Red is the root zone. Again, stuff that falls somewhere else. The first one in our region is, I guess you can say, was Yap's fault, NL. Then you've got Omar, Italy, Poland, Net for some reason. RO I've forgotten off the top of my head. And Czechoslovakia. Then we go on to which IPv6 zones are actually queried. So we get an idea of what the spread of how many people are using V6. And this one's interesting in terms of we have early spikes on 6.0.1, etc., and then they go away. And that roughly corresponds with we had this 6 and so forth got allocated back here. They got allocated back in November, December. Then we have the spike of DNS queries coming up in February, and they're dying away. And then back in August, they barely show. The same thing happens with 7.0.1. We start allocating from them, and we get another spike where they didn't show up before. So the DNS queries are roughly following the allocation things, but as for why they die away, I have no idea. So, again, it's an interesting oddity. And then we get on to actual query types. Contrary to what people might think, we mostly do reverse zones. I have a laser pointer.
May I ask a question to the IPv6 ARPA thing? It might be that you're seeing these peaks when there's already people using these addresses and nameservers doing reverse queries for them, but the actual zone being not yet delegated to the people.
And so the re-query mechanism, you mean?
Yeah, something like that, because I've noticed that the reverse DNS delegation takes usually far longer than taking the addresses and actually using them. Yep. And doing trace routing, which generates lots of reverse queries, of course. So this might explain why there's a peak in the beginning when you start using giving out the addresses, mm-hmm. and then later on the peaks
are all... They're dying away as people realise, hey, there's no reverse, then they go and actually delegate it.
Yeah, I'm just guessing, but that might explain the timing pattern.
Again with this was started up to identify where the queries are going. It wasn't trying to map where, you know, this was allocated X ago, and then it was delegated at Y. It's purely interesting in terms of that regard. Peter?
May I add another question? Did you check whether you answered those queries with NX domain or with referrals? Could you add a check?
These, in the summarization there, skipping ahead slightly, but it's basically TCP dump of queries directed at us. It's not being mapped up with the answers that we gave.
Okay.
So for these, I do not know what we answered at that time. I also mapped what sort of queries we've got. Again, we thought that we did primarily reverse zones, and indeed the number of queries going to reverse zones was fairly high. But when you look at what people are actually querying for, A, Quad A, and A6 are fairly much the same level, followed by PTR queries. So because we've got so many CCTLDs, they're about the same level. So unfortunately, the granularity of the scale results in purely we're going up and down between 50 and 100K. But looking at the stats when I first started doing that, it was enough to start splitting up the zones. So any other questions on the graphs? No? Okay. So now just commenting on the data collection method. We use the switch monitoring port on the Ethernet switch going into them, just monitor the queries going in, TCP dump running after that, and then running our summarization scripts on the TCP dumps, just totaling them. The graphs aren't as nice as I would like them, simply because we're missing stuff, because the time it took to run the summarization was X, the time to collect the data was X minus some significant figure. Killing one set of disks because TCP dump writing, then removing the file a lot is, like, we're collecting several gig of TCP dumps per day, then they get removed, and so forth. Sometimes we had operational problems, which meant we couldn't continue the collection for a period of time. And other times we get what I call inexplicable queries. Again, someone asking for joeblow@hotmail.com, and what's the A record for that? And how did it get to our name servers in the first place is one of these interesting items. So that's purely the conclusions that I drew from it. We started separating some of our zones onto different name servers. So instead of our zones being on ns.ripe.net, they're now on ns-pri. This is also preparation for DNSSEC, so we don't have a huge memory footprint on one machine. And A6 versus Quad A, they're about the same queries. They're the same query rate. So there's a lot of software still out there that's querying for an old record that they shouldn't be. And what's the other interest? Final questions?
Do we have any more questions for Bruce? I see Peter Koch coming to the microphone. Peter.
Sorry for bothering you again. When you were talking about these joeschmo@hotmail.com queries, did you check whether those queries are recursive queries or with the RDBit cleared?
That one I don't know. So my
idea is that probably lots of people just abuse your name servers
as
forwarders, as recursive servers or whatever.
That's actually something I didn't consider. In the collection of data, it was TCP dump with a whole lot of options to show that, and it doesn't actually show recursive bit versus any other flags in most conditions. So I did not look at whether they were recursive or not.
Okay, so that might be interesting. So you can, after monitoring that, probably identify the most troublesome sources of queries and either approach them directly by email or whatever, which is more or less promising if it comes from dial-up customers of any one large internet provider. Or you could, but I'm not suggesting weird things now, or you could just provide them with, say, tailored answers, which may or may not be designed to stop them somehow.
Yep.
Read SiteFinder, bracket, that, okay.
Yeah, the comment about identifying the individual people, during February and March, I looked at this in a lot greater detail, you know, in trying to prepare a project summary, and there wasn't really any one, or there wasn't really a top 10 offenders. You know, these people are querying a lot of stuff because the number of queries from each individual IP is fairly much the average. You see things like, say, the Access for All resolving name servers. We see them spiking up. But, again, they're proper name servers, and we expect them, they're an ISP, we expect them to be high.
Yeah, sure. With offenders, then I would just in that class, I guess the abusers of recursive service would fall.
Yeah.
And another suggestion would be to instead of recording the queries, you probably could try to record the answers, which are longer, but which then contain the...
More data to be collected.
Oh, yes. Speaking of gigabytes. have you heard of these exabyte tapes?
This is out to be a thorough analysis of everything that hits us.
Yeah.
It's just the queries in terms of should we continue with a single name server or not is what it started out being.
Yeah, but that might help in finding whether this is normal traffic pattern or where you whether there's any chance to do anything about it, or it's just load that is legitimately there.
It would be interesting, but
don't think that. Okay, no more questions. Thank you very much, Bruce. Final speaker for this morning is Carsten Schlotzmann from Man and Mice, who's going to give us some information about the work he's been doing on DNS monitoring. You wanted to use this one? Or?
Yes.
Okay. Does it work? Okay.
So good morning, everyone. My name is Carsten Schrotmann. I'm from company Man and Mice, and in coincidence, what I show you now, it's very similar to what Bruce has shown before, but there's no connection between what we show now. It's just what we are doing here is performance monitoring. It's similar, and if you like to have same charts as you've seen before in for your own network or your own DNS server, this might be something interesting for you. So first I will say a little bit about our company for these people in the audience who don't know us, then about the performance monitoring product we have, and a little live demo on the DNS traffic here in the room. Man and Mice is a company from Iceland. We are located in Reykjavik, a small island very up in the north. It's good for programmers there because it's dark all night in winter, so we are very productive in winter times. Founded in 1990, and we concentrate only on our DNS and IP address management topics. We do nothing else. And we have a small and very flexible staff. And we do these products, so we do some programming. We do some research on DNS health worldwide, also in work together with registries on that. We do some consulting for customers in DNS and IP address management space, and we do DNS trainings worldwide. So a little bit about our our vision of product is. We base everything on standard operating systems, and we are very cross-platform. And if your platform is not in there, chances are good because we have a very layered architecture that we can support your platform also. And then we use a standard name server and DHCP servers. So we use Bind 8 and Bind 9 and Windows DNS server. We don't do our own name servers or DHCP servers for that because the products that are in the market are good. And then we, on the top, we have our management and diagnostic and monitoring software. So what are the goals for the performance monitoring? We wanted to do a framework to easily collect and analyze DNS traffic data from either DNS server itself or on special network gateways to see how much DNS traffic is going in and out a specific network segment. It is also our design goal to monitor high-volume DNS traffic, not only our small offices with 20 people in there, but also in high-volume DNS server traffic there. And it should be flexible and extendable architecture, and everything that we have done now is not really revolutionary. It has been done before, but it might be useful for some people. So there are small data collection probes or daemons running on either on DNS server itself, or if you don't like to install some additional software on your DNS server, you can have an appliance or a machine listening at a switch monitoring port. I will go more detail in how it's technically work later. Today it works on Solaris Linux on the BSDs and on Mac OS X. That is because we have customers that demand that if you need HPUX, AX, or any other Unix, or Windows, we can do that. We just haven't done that before because nobody asked for that. And all the DNS data, the answers and the responses are read from the network by packet capturing and sent to a central place, the DNS performance monitoring application. And there, all the data is feed into an SQL database. There is a built-in database, which is HSQ QLDB, which is a Java integrated database, which comes with the product itself, that is only good for small deployments. And if you have really high volume, we recommend to use full blown SQL database like MySQL or Postgres or Oracle or DB2 or whatever is on the market. So every Java database connection supported database can be used here. So this is the architecture. We have here on the right side the data collection probes. You can have any number of them in the network. They are just collecting DNS data and sending it to the central system. And then in the central system, everything is going here into some database. And then we have report modules, different from them. These report modules can bring information on the screen. Here as graphics or as reports, I show you later in a web GUI. And we can also export to ASCII, like comma-separated values, or PDF, or XML, or any other things. So the development of this product is really totally customer-driven. And the framework is flexible today, and we're working on it to make it more flexible also in the future. And if your report you need is not in the product today, it might be in there tomorrow. You have just to ask or to cry loud enough. It should work with all RC-compliant DNS servers because we just disassemble DNS packages on the network, and all name servers that work with the RCs in mind should work here. And the reports can be sent to web browsers or to the backend export modules. And here is what we have today. You can see the number of queries, number of answers, how many NX domains answers are going out of the net DNS servers, and the errors, number of errors, and what kind of errors you have. You can see the round trip time. That is the difference between an answer coming in and a query coming in and an answer coming out. If you are measuring at a DNS server, if you are measuring more on the client side, you see how long an answer takes from going out from a client to come back to the client network. Then we have a report on the client host, that is who is asking DNS queries. And then the report on the DNS service asked, so who gets the questions, who is asked, and reports on the DNS query data itself, like what is asked. So what domain names and record types, and we see also the return codes of all successful or unsuccessful answers coming in or going out from the name server. And then we have a report on top level and second level domains by numbers. And we can also see the round trip time by top level domains and second level domains. And DNS servers, so what DNS servers are really slow. And you can also split that in local DNS servers that are on your network and remote DNS servers that are somewhere else in the internet. So you have also choice. There is a software only solution from us, from Anonymize, that can be purchased directly from us or through our resellers like N3K here in the UK or Netlink in the Netherlands or anywhere else. And there's a special hardware appliance which everything pre-installed. That is from a company All Installed from Germany, and that is built under license. So the code in the machine is the same as a software solution. And if you want to have control over everything, there's a source code option available. So if you need source code, if you want to develop it in your own direction, if you just need it as a starting point because you don't want to start with zero, you want to build up on this product, you can have the source code, just ask us. So I now switch to a little live demo of DNS traffic I collected in the last few hours here in the room. I hope I don't offend anyone here with using the data, but I think DNS data is almost open and public. So what we see here is the DNS server or DNS traffic in this room starting at somewhere here at 9 when the DNS session began, and At the start, there was many traffic here, and this is a coffee break here. We see that. And on the top, going up, we see the incoming requests, or the requests sent out from this room. And on the bottom, we see the answers. The green lines are the successful answers, and the blue line is the annexed domains, and the red line is the error condition, some answers that come back as an error. We have this information in more detail. That's normally faster, but my the system was in sleep before. So here we see the last 2 hours of DNS traffic. The same, we have black here, the number of queries. We have green, the number of successful answers. We have blue, the number of annex domain answers, and red, a number of errors. And we see here in the last few minutes there were many, many errors back. And so we have this for today, for the whole day, and also for a week, and also for months. But this is running on my laptop here. It's a development machine, so we don't have so much data here for a long time. So this is next coming up is the round trip time. So and here we see difference between the time when a query was going out and an answer is coming back. And actually, if there's a lot of green, that's not good, because then we have a very high minimum round trip time. That is somewhere at 11:55, we had a minimum runtime time about 600 milliseconds, which is bad. If we don't see any green and we see only a little bit red, that's the best condition here. That is, we have a very fast normal minimum runtime time and only a small maximum runtime time. And the blue line is the average of that. And we see that here also last 2 hours. And today and week and so on. But what really is interesting is the reports here. For example, we can look up who is asking DNS queries. So this is takes a little bit time because it makes the reverse lookup on the IP addresses here. But the software is caching reverse lookup, so it will only take so much time to first run. So we see here that one machine, we see 8247 machine, that machine is doing the most DNS queries here in the room, which are 4,218 queries over the last 24 hours of measurement here in the room. And we see here...
Excuse me, Carson. Just out of curiosity, would anyone like to own up to owning that particular laptop?
Anyone?
DCP8247.
Okay. And if you need more information, there is a lens
here in front. And then you get a picture of the culprit.
We're working on that. because it's 4,000 entries, it takes the time to fetch from the database now. And then... Oops.
Development version.
Okay. Here we have a little bit less. And here we see which node is records this entry, what type record type that was from, what source address. It's here the same source address because we're looking at someone from that source address to what destination address, what return code, and what DNS question is asked from that particular machine. We can have the same for destination address, that is what DNS server is being asked, and also for the type. The type is interesting. So here we say, see, A records are the topmost record type asked in this room, followed by the quad A, and then pointer records. Then we have a lot of, Microsoft machines, probably, looking for their domain controllers for service records. Then we have A6, SOA records, TXT records, MX records, and so on and so forth, C names. And with all of the reports, you can go to the looking glass or lens on the left side and see a detail. So if we want to see, okay, what was these TXT records? So I should install a real SQL database on my machine here. It's already gotten slow for the Java database. No.
Your machine wouldn't be that would make the most queries with ARM.
Let's see for the MX records here. Okay, here we see the MX records and the DNS data asked for. So by return code, we see how the questions are answered. No. Seems we have problems here. Yes. No question? Okay. Let me switch to the presentation because I have prepared some slides. So this is how the return codes look like. So we see how many no error returns there was, how many server fail, how many NX domain, how much format error, how much refused, and so on. All the error codes that are possible. And we can also, if we have like here refused, we can click on the looking glass to see what actually queries that was refused from what DNS server. And then we have a list of top-level domains. So the most question was for the upper domain and then for the net domain, and so on and so forth. And some global statistics about the probes. So this probe has got 16,000 queries, and that was 13,000-something successful, 360 NX domain, 700 other error responses, which was the success rate roughly 92%. And the success rate here in the room was a little bit about 50% from good queries and good answers here. So I'm through my presentation. Any questions I can answer?
Are there any questions for Carson? Yeah.
Well, I'm always a bit slow, but to get this thing straight, I mean, a lot of the graphs had headings like server ITT or DNS server ITT, and what confused me, are you looking at a specific server or just listening at port 53?
This is, that depends on how the product is configured. what we have seen here was all traffic on port 53. But I can configure it to see specific servers if I want to.
Okay, so it's the mismatch between the labeling and
yes.
the date.
Yes.
Yeah. Peter?
Do you also view it queries by over TCP, or do you just sniff UDP packets?
At this time, only UDP is analyzed. So the probes are able to see in TCP,
okay.
but because nobody asked for this function, it is not in the in the framework or in the graphs today.
Cast a very quick question for you related to that. What about EDNS0 packets? Does that make any difference to what you're gathering?
I'm not sure. I don't think we analyze EDNS0 today, but it is possible.
Okay.
Yeah, but yeah. It would actually be very interesting to see that, because the belief is that if the DNS servers are responding to port A records and they're actually talking IPv6, that they would be able to do EDNS0, and so packet size is not really a problem. And but that's the thing. It would be interesting if somebody can produce figures about this.
Yes, it's support for EDNS0 analyzing is some of the top points of our roadmap there, and I think it will be available at end of this year.
Yeah, the same actually to the TCP stuff, because when it goes to TCP, you really want to know how much, how often it happens, and so it's more generic curiosity than anything else, but
okay.
Useful data.
Okay. Your name, please?
Sam Weiler. How much real-time monitoring?
Pardon?
Is there any real-time flagging?
You see the reports and the graphs are, or the reports are half minute delay.
But there's no alarm network monitoring type functionality.
Yes, it is from the reports. You don't see it on the graphical interface, but in there's export modules that can send SNMP traps.
Okay.
And for thresholds, you can define thresholds and send SNMP traps, and we have a big customer, it's a telecommunication company in Germany that is using this feeding XML into our global network monitoring system from this.
Okay. Thank you very much, Carsten. Any
yes.
more questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we have a couple of items of any other business which I need to run through. These are first one is an apology from myself, because you might remember we had a discussion about the appointment of another DNS Working Group co-chair, and we hope to have a decision made about that for the Working Group to endorse at this particular meeting. Well, I sort of dropped the ball on that, so we haven't been able yet to reach a decision about this, and we'll try and do it very, very soon, and we'll pass some information out to the Working Group list when that can be managed. My apologies for that. Second thing I would like to say is that there seems to be, it looks like a good idea to perhaps have a joint session of the DNS and IPv6 working groups. There was quite a bit of DNS content in the IPv6 working group at this particular right meeting. I don't know if it was anything to do with the fact that we had the IPv6 people having a meeting jointly with the right meeting itself. But there's things happening. Obviously now we've got quad A records in the TLD zone, in some TLD zones. There's the ICANN procedure the IANA procedure for dealing with that, and there's some rumblings going on about introducing IPv6 for the routes. So this looks as if there could be enough material in that for a joint session. So we might just try to schedule that sometime for the next right meeting, depending on if we can get the speakers and things lined up. But it does look to be fairly doable. And this would be something we just try to make sure that we have this strand in the DNS working group that doesn't really conflict with anything that's happening in the IPv6 working group in the times, and we'll just have a joint session and go through that stuff in detail. Does everybody think that's a bad idea? We should not do that, or we should do that? Does anybody care? A couple of nods of the head, so I assume the silence implies consent. Thank you very much. Final item we have here is Arno Mullenkamp wants to say one or two words about RIPE-NCC's DNetSec training, and that will finish us off for today. Arno.
Hi, good afternoon. This is really just very short, one slide, to give some information on the DNSSEC courses that the RIPE-NCC does. For this year, we have got two planned, one in Amsterdam, one in Novosibirsk in Siberia, where, of course, you're all welcome to join. Other than that, these are the venues for the first 6 months of 2005. And the DNSSEC course basically is just an introduction on what is DNSSEC, what gets added to the DNS to get the security in there. So if you're interested, you're more than welcome to come.
Okay. A few things to say. I would like to say thank you to all the speakers for the presentations and to the assistance of the NCC staff with logistical things like scribing and doing some stuff with the Jabber sessions and the audiovisual and the laptops and stuff like that, the usual high standard. Thanks very much for all that. Oh well, somebody clap. And I'll see you all hopefully in Stockholm, and let's go have some lunch.